All right. So today we discuss the Sedra Vayishlach, which we'll read this Shabbos. Vayishlach is also a diverse Sedra, really bringing Yaakov back from exile into the land of Israel, with unfortunately some of the sorrows that happen when he returns to Eretz Yisrael. And one of them, which has ramifications until today, is the story of Dina. Dina, Yaakov's daughter, who was kidnapped and raped, and then after inducing the people of Shechem, the townspeople, to circumcise themselves and become weak, then Shimon and Levi, two of Yaakov's sons, take it upon themselves to perpetrate a massacre of the entire city, killing all the males, taking the women and children captive, and all the brothers took the spoils of that city. And really it's the sons of Yaakov's first involvement with the nations of the world. Really, we'll see, it's the first act as a nation. And it has to be understood, because as I mentioned in an article I wrote, came out last week that you may have read, the Torah leaves it somewhat ambiguous. Yaakov has his point of view. The brothers have their point of view. The Torah here essentially leaves it open. Yaakov in Vayechi, on his deathbed, again revisits the incident and castigates his sons. But as our commentators understood it, and certainly there's no unanimity, there is a machlokas between Yaakov and his sons. And for Machlokas always has two sides, and two equally compelling and logical sides, two valid points, just conflicting interests. We have to understand what those interests are, what the conflict is, what Machlokas is, and see what impact it has on our lives today, and how we look at the world also. So it begins with Perek Lamed Daled. But Tetzei Dina Bas Le'ashe Yaldo Le'Yakov L'Roz Pevnos Aretz. Dina, Leah's daughter, goes out to see the daughters of the land. Meaning she's cooped up in a house with 11 brothers. So she wants to get out and find some female companionship. Chazal are critical. All right, it's not politically correct to blame the victim, but ordinarily the victim does share some measure of blame, usually, and certainly Chazal recognized it here. She got herself into a situation where she should not have been, and unfortunately paid a terrible price for it. Vayaro soch Shechem ben Chamor achivi nisi haaretz veikach osa veishkav osa vayaneho. Shechem, the son of Chamor, who is the prince of the land, the tribal chieftain in that area, in Shechem. He sees her, he takes her forcibly, he rapes her, and he torments her. And then, Vatidbak Nafsho Bidino Bas Yaakov. Then, very paradoxically, his soul cleaves to her, falls in love with her. Vayahaves Hanaro, Vayadaber Alev Hanaro. He falls in love with her, and he starts to attempt to seduce her. And then he says to his father, Kach li esay al dozos lisho. See to it, arrange that this girl, and Dina was very young at the time, less than 10 years old, see to it that she should become my wife. Now, obviously, as the Torah will note, such an event is horrific, and certainly for the Bnei Yaakov, it's horrific. For Yaakov himself, that a father, that a brother should be put in this predicament, it's very difficult to tolerate. Yaakov has an interesting response. Yaakov shama ki timeis dino vito. Yaakov heard that his daughter Dina was defiled. Uvanov hayos mekneu basadev. And his sons were with the cattle in the field. Becherish Yaakov ad Boam. Yaakov was silent until they came. Yaakov does not respond rashly or impetuously, even emotionally for that matter, Yaakov holds a silence, which we'll see is the measure of the Chacham as opposed to his children. Yaakov is silent, realizing that now there's nothing he could do, that the foul deed has already been done, and whatever response they're going to take, it has to be measured, rational, and designed to achieve whatever they decided, the objectives. So, v'chrish Yaakov ad bo'om. We shouldn't be critical of Yaakov for not responding hysterically. On the contrary, that's the measure of the Chacham. He doesn't respond hysterically. He responds rationally without any frenzy. Now, Hamor, Shem's father, goes out to speak to Yaakov. At the same time, Uvnei Yaakov bo men asode kishamom. They heard what happened and they came back. So you have very interesting interplay as the sons of Yaakov are coming to console and consult with their father. Hamor, the father of the perpetrator, is coming at the same time. Vayis'atzu anashim, and they become very aggrieved. Vayichal lohem me'od, and they become very angry. Ki nevolo aso b'Yisrael, because this is an abomination, degradation in Israel. Lishkav es bas Yaakov, to sleep with Yaakov's daughter. V'chein lo ye'oseh, and so it should not be done. That this should not be done, certainly not in the household of Yaakov, and not anywhere. It's not the way civilized people behave. In fact, Ramban says here that that's the way they behaved at the Mabul. That was the Dor HaMabul. They just wantonly seized and assaulted women. So can't, what's that? Yeah, why did it have to be explained? I'll have to ask something. I'll answer something else. Why they were angry?
Why did it have to be explained why they were angry?
Well, a simple pshat is it puts into perspective what their motivation is going to be. That when the offer is made to marry, they don't take the offer seriously. But beyond this, something else that's interesting. The Torah says, Ki nevolo aso v'Yisrael. They committed this abomination in Israel. All right? Who is Israel? There is no Israel. It's Yaakov. There's 11 sons, 4 wives and 2 daughters, and 1 daughter. So who is Israel? And the Torah is acting as if there's some policy. Ki nevolo aso b'Yisrael. They did this abomination in Israel. V'chein lo ye'oseh. Cannot be. Cannot be, or chein lo ye'oseh should not happen again. So they have to do something to deter its recurrence. All right? But what is b'Yisrael? Who are we talking about here?
Israel, I mean, he, in the last episode, right before this, he himself gets the name Israel. So it's more, maybe it's just that's not the way it's done in his. I mean, it's not just him and his children. He has a huge caravan of people following him. They're like a little, you know, mini nation amongst themselves. So maybe that's not the way he's done with them.
See, Rashi says, "V'chein lo ye'oseh la'anosis absulo sha'umos gidrat min arayos aydei amabel." He says the nations of the world themselves repudiated this type of behavior after the flood, and they adopted more stringent moral norms. Ramban disagrees and says they're completely immoral. As the Torah says later on, we shouldn't do like the Canaanim did. This is what they did. So, Nivola asav Yisrael, and v'chein lo yaseh, even b'mos olam, shouldn't happen even in their society. But who is Yisrael? Who are we talking about here? What's that? A lamb is called Eretz Canaan. All right. And Yaakov himself had no lamb. And he bought a little sliver of Shechem, which later became Kever Yosef, which is where this story takes place. But what is happening here? What are they saying? Now, Hamor comes, Pasaches, and says to Yaakov and his sons, Shechem b'ni chashko nafsho b'vitchem. My son Shechem, his soul desires, meaning he loves your daughter. Actually, he left out, you know, a primary element of the story, but selective memory is also part of the human existence. He mentions nothing about the kidnap and the rape, just my son is in love. Tenu no sa lo lisha. Give her to him as a wife. And then he increases the offer. Vischatnu osanu, you'll marry us. B'nasechem titnu lanu, you'll give us your daughters. B'nasechem titnu lachem, you will take our daughters. v'tanu teshevu, we'll all dwell together. V'aretz tiel lefneichem, the land is before you. Shvu uscharuha ve'achazuba. Settle here, do your business here, dwell here in a permanent sense. Shechem says, v'yomer Shechem el aviyah v'elachea emtzochem b'neichem. Shechem agrees. And then he says to his father, give Yaakov a big dowry, give him many gifts, so as to try to hasten the marriage. Vayanu yud gimu. Vayanu v'nei Yaakov eshchem eschamor aviv b'mirmo v'idabero. They answered him deceitfully. But Rashi says b'mirmo is b'chochmo, with wisdom. Just like in Sedra 2 weeks ago, when Yaakov tells Esav, bo'achicha b'mirmo, your brother came literally with deception. So Rashi says there too, not deception. Bimirmo means b'chachma. They use their guile, their cleverness, their wisdom to devise a scheme whereby they would be able to attain their ends. Those ends we haven't yet defined. Vaymer aleihem, they said to them, lo nuchal lasos hadavar hazeh. We can't do this, laseses achosein elish asher lo arlo. We can't do this to someone who's uncircumcised. Ki cherpayu lanu. It's embarrassing to us. It's not the way we live our lives. Mila represents a certain pursuit of perfection. And we can only intermarry with those who share those values. Ach bizos neos lachem. But if it's good for you, it's good for us. Im tiuchamonu limolachem kol zachar. The way, the entree into our family is mila. Vinosanu es binosechem. And vinosanu es binosein lachem. We'll give you our daughters. We'll take your daughters. V'yashavnu etchem. We will dwell together. V'hoyinu l'am echad. And we'll be one people, one nation. It's interesting. Because the implication here is right now they are shnei amim, they're two separate nations. We're talking a very small number of people, really 14 people, small nation. But now we'll be vayinu l'am echad. Now we'll be a single people. Vimlo tishmo elenu limol, and if you don't listen to us and you don't want to circumcise, v'lo kachnu es biteinu v'halachnu, then we'll take our daughter and leave. Now Hamor agrees and Shechem agrees. And you'll notice in the Pesukim right away, they go to the townspeople and they say to them, this is the deal, Chaf Aleph, Hanashim Ha'elah Shleimim Hem Itanu. They're very peaceable with us. They'll live with us. They'll do business with us. The land will be good for them and for us. We'll take their daughters. They'll take our daughters. All right? And then he had something else to sweeten the deal, which he hadn't said to Yaakov and Chaf Gimel, Miknehem V'kinyonam V'chol Behem Tam. Hello, Lanuheim. Their cattle, their possessions, all their animals. It's really ours anyway. So it means they're a wealthy group, wealthy family. So we'll take them to us, and we'll be able to seize, if not benefit from their wealth. Notice that aspect was not mentioned when Hamor spoke to Yaakov, but to persuade his fellow citizens to agree to circumcision, then. That's what he told them. Now, Mila was really the mark of the family of Avram. And in the ancient world, those who knew, they were set aside because of that. Since in some measure it's an unnatural act, and at a certain point, I'm sure a painful act too, so most of the, that's why it's a source of so many jokes in society. Because it's hard for, especially a male, it's hard to imagine such a thing. So the family of Avram was noted for that, and somewhat isolated because of it. After the Mila, the Torah tells us that Oner, Eshkol, and Mamre, who are Avram's close friends, they sort of distanced themselves from him, because they saw that now there was a barrier between them. Nevertheless, Hamor and Shechem were able to overcome the natural resistance to that procedure by telling them, we'll commingle our families, and we'll benefit from the wealth also. Now, what was their plan? What was their plan? So the Ramban in Pasuk Yud Gimel says that the plan that they all agreed upon was that they would ask for Mila with the assumption that it would be turned down. And if it would be turned down, then they would say, okay, then just give us Dinah back and we'll go on our merry ways. The brothers, though, had an alternate plan. Even Yaakov, the Ramban says, had an alternate plan. Because let's say they did agree. And then what? Yaakov's going to give his daughter Dinah to a rapist? La yitachein. So in the alternate, the Ramban says, the plan was that they would have the milah, they'd be weakened from the milah, and on the third day, when they'd be weakened from the milah, Yaakov and his sons would seize Dinah, take her out of Shechem's house, and take her back, and that would be the end. They would disappear into the wind. That was the plan. Yes?
Why would milah be conditioned onto itself? Why not
milah
plus
we have to believe in our God? Well, I think it's self-understood. Right. I think it's self-understood, but, you know, belief is cheap. Milah is, for an adult especially. What's that?
They didn't even mention a belief in our monotheistic.
Right. No, you're correct. I think it's self-understood. But the real difficulty is not in the belief system. There's no Torah, after all. You just have to accept one God. The real obstacle was the milah. And that's what they focused on. And really, milah was the symbol of the fact that the house of Avram is responsive to a different moral code. In the ancient world, that was known. The Jews, milah. Understood. Even when Yosef goes down to Egypt, all right? In fact, Chazal said that how did he reveal himself to his brothers? He showed them his milah. No one else was circumcised. And that's what he showed them, that he was part of the family of Avram. So, implicit in Milo is the acceptance of Shev Mitzvah Neinoach, and I mean, they had to accept Mitzvah Neinoach anyway, but acceptance of Kadosh Baruch, that was implicit.
No, but was it truly a deterrent, the one belief in, you know, to say I believe is...
Belief is
that's
true.
That's not necessarily a deterrent. Yeah, you can say anything you want.
That's correct. So it's the act of Milo which, is, in a sense, ratifies... in a painful way, what their new belief system would be. All right, so they really didn't expect them to accept. And once they did accept, so plan B. Now they accept, so weaken them and take Dinah. So they do it. They have their milah. Vayhi bayom ha-shlishi, pasuk chavei, biyosam ka'avim, when they're in pain from the milah. Vayikhu shnei v'nei Yaakov, Shimon v'levi, achei Dinah ish harbo. Shimon and Levi, both just bar mitzvah age, 13 and 14. They took their swords, vayavo alir betach, they came to the city with confidence, vayargu kol zachar, they killed every male in town. Chamor and Shechem, they killed also l'fichara, they singled them out. Vayikhu az dina mibay Shechem vayitzer, they took Dina out and they left. Then the Bnei Yaakov came, and vayavozu ha'ir, they plundered the city, Es sonam ves bikaram shamorehem veis asher boir veis asher basodeh lakachu. They took everything that the town had to offer. Koch elam, all their wealth, tapam, their children, nishehem, their wives, shavu bayavozu, they captured, eis kol sheba boyas. And now we come to the two psukim, which really attempt to define the machlokas here. Yaakov is horrified. Vayomer Yaakov, pasuk lamed. Vayomer Yaakov el Shimon ve'el Levi, Yaakov says to his two sons, Achartemosi, you have besmirched me. Lahavisheni b'yoshev ha'aretz, you've made me odious to the inhabitants of the land, b'kana'ani u'v'aprizi, the Kananim and the prison. V'ani mesei mispar, I am few in number, v'nesfu alai v'hikuni, they will gather against me, v'hikuni, they will smite me, Vinishmarati ani uvesi, and I will be destroyed, I and my household. Well, I just read the words. What's Yaakov's complaint? What's his criticism? Yes. That's correct. Maybe it's not so troublesome. Maybe we have to redefine what he's saying, what exactly the issues are. But see, Yaakov does not criticize their act. And this is what I wrote the other day. Yaakov is criticizing their impetuosity. He's criticizing their anger. He's saying you acted irrationally. because you have to be able to project the consequences of your action. Here, you're just a small group. You're basically 10 boys, all right? And now you kill an entire city. But so you killed this city. But now people will hear, l'havisheinu b'yoshev haaretz, people will hear that Yaakov's sons are a band of marauders. V'ani m'seh mispar, we're just a few people. So you weren't thinking clearly. And then they'll gather against us, they'll kill us, we'll be destroyed. So what did you gain by it? You avenged Dina's honor, but on the other hand, you've endangered now the entire enterprise. So you weren't thinking clearly.
Is it also bad press? And if you go back to when you asked your Yisrael question,
it is bad
you
press.
Asked the Yisrael question of what's Yisrael. So if you're going to say that we, quote unquote, we're the Yisrael, we have the moral high ground,
right?
This went,
right.
This is the official, this is the direct response. Not that you want to kill people, but now the press, we're toting how great we are, and this totally knocked that off the table.
Okay, what's the other side? One second. Vayamru, and they said to Yaakov, Hachizono, Ya'ases Achoseinu. Shall we let them turn our sister into a harlot? Period. End of Parsha. The Torah moves on to another area. Now Yaakov revisits this at the end of Vayechi, when he's blessing his sons. Doesn't give Shimon and Levi much of a blessing, but he says to them, Arur apom kiyoz, Shimon v'Levi achim klei chamos mecheresam. That Shimon and Levi are brothers, the tools of violence are their stock in trade. All right? And he says, one second, B'sodom al tavo nashi b'kom al techad kodi, kiv apom harguish, in their anger they killed a person, u'virtzona mikrushar, and in their will they uprooted shar, here means Yosef, orur apom kiyoz, cursed is their anger, for it is fierce, evrasam, and their wrath, kikashasa, because it is very difficult. Achal kein bi Yaakov, vafitzein bi Yisrael. I will divide them amongst Yaakov and spread them out amongst Israel. It's interesting that Yaakov's criticism really takes on the same nature. He doesn't criticize what they did. He criticizes the process. Arur apom kiyaz. Think about it. If your child went out and killed an entire town, you would probably be upset that they killed, not so much that it was the anger that fueled their killing. Yet he attacks their anger. Aru apom ki oz, ve'evrasam ki kashasa. We have to understand, what is their argument? And the Torah doesn't really elaborate on it. The Torah gives Yaakov's essentially utilitarian argument, not moral argument, utilitarian. That here you made us look bad, and worse, you've endangered us. Versus the brother's seemingly emotional argument of Hachizono Yasas Achoseinu, and therefore we don't care about the consequences. My point when I wrote last week was to illustrate the difference between the general and the politician, the statesman really. The general is focused on achieving one end, whereas the statesman has to consider many, many different values and interests. And so that was Yaakov here also. Yaakov had not only the honor of Dina to avenge, but Yaakov also had the long-term interests of his family and Klal Yisrael at heart. And the brothers not. The brothers were focused on one thing. What is that? They say honor? It's more than honor. It's v'chein lo ye'aseh. They needed to turn. If we're going to represent this particular force in the world, a divine force, then if they don't have any fear of us, if they think that being religious, being a godly person, means that you're a pushover, that any nation can bully and torment and afflict without any recompense, then we can't survive either. So the brothers felt deterrence was necessary. Yaakov didn't disagree. But Yaakov said the way you went about it was incorrect. Your thought processes were incorrect. Now, the basic question we have to understand is, were they right in what they did? Were they justified in what they did? What's that? Well, let's see. It's Yaakov's plan had one thing missing, all right? And that is, if they rescued Dina from being kidnapped, that's fine, but what about the perpetrator? All right. So apparently, even Ramban maintains that he assumed that Shechem and his father would be killed. And Yaakov had no problem with them killing Shechem or Hamor. The problem that he had was killing the entire city. That was the problem that he had. Now, let's understand that there are different views. The Rambam justifies it. The Rambam says openly in Hilchos Melacha, Perek Tes, Halacha Yudalid, that of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, the seven Noachide laws, one of them, one as we counted the last one, is the Mitzvah of Dinin. Literally, laws. So what is that? The others are straightforward. Don't do this. Kill, steal, blaspheme, etc. V'chetzad mitzuvin heim aladinim. What is this? What are the parameters? What are the particulars of this last of the Noahide laws? Chayovin lahoshiv dayanim v'shoftim v'chol pelech u'pelech. It requires the nations of the world to establish a judicial system. Judges in every district. Ladun b'sheish mitzvos eilu, to judge these other six laws. So you have the six basic Noahide laws, not to kill, not to steal, not to worship idols, not to blaspheme, not to eat Eivir Menachai, not to be immoral. You have those six. So the seventh requires the establishment of a judicial system which will enforce the other six. What if you don't? Uben Noach she'avar lachas mishem mitzvos eilu yehareg b'sayif. A Ben Noach who violates any of the seven laws is killed with the sword. The Rambam says, because of this, the entire city of Shechem was liable to the death penalty. Shehare Shechem gozal, Shechem kidnapped Dina. Vehem ro, they saw it. Veyadu, they knew about it. Velo danu, they did not bring him to justice. So the Rambam says they were right in what they did. I said, why is Yaakov unhappy? So now the Rambam makes sense. Yaakov was unhappy because, of course, it was right what they did, but it was unwise. Just because you're right doesn't mean you're smart. In fact, they say, better to be smart than to be right. So they were unwise, and that's what was critical, that if Jews are going to take a lesson from this to act in a very rash, irrational way, so you feel good about it, but you'll wind up killing yourselves. And that was his protest. Yes. Right. Right. Plundering. Oh, not always. No, no, you should say that. Not always. There are times when plundering was allowed. All right? Yeah, you think about the Megillah, Megillas Esther, but there was special because that was the commandment that was given. And one case in Yeshua also, where Achan was the one who took spoils. But ordinarily, I take spoils. David always took spoils in his wars. Shaul took spoils. What's that? Well, not necessarily so, because when... we'll get back to that. Someone does say that. But once you've killed the entire city, then it's hefker. The property belongs to no one. So you might as well take it. And that's part of the deterrent. That's part of the deterrent. That if they're killed and their property is gone, it's as if there's no remnant of Shechem. And people will know, why is there no remnant of Shechem anymore? It's because they defiled Yaakov's daughter, and her brothers came and massacred the entire city and took their wealth. So there's no shame. There's no remnant of the city or people of Shechem anymore. That is an effective deterrent. That's what they felt. It's effective if you have the power to defend yourself. Yaakov said, but we're vulnerable. So weak, vulnerable nations don't have the luxury of effecting deterrent in the long term. Yes? Shimon and Levi?
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's already a machlokas amongst the Mefarshim. Some say that all the brothers knew of Shimon and Levi's plans, but they didn't have the courage to do it. Only Shimon and Levi did. That's what they called a chay dina. The Medrash says only they were willing to risk their lives for their sister. The others were not, so they're given that appellation, a chay dina. But they all knew about it. Others say not. Only Shimon and Levi knew about it. And Yaakov did not, And in fact, as the Torah says, why is it called, what did the Torah say, extraneous phrase, by Chushnei v'nei Yaakov, Shimon v'Levi. We don't know that Shimon and Levi are Yaakov's sons. So Rashi says, Banov hayu, they were his sons. Afal pichein, nagu atzman, Shimon Levi, kishara noshim, sheinam banov. Shalom notlu eitzahim menu. They acted like they weren't his sons because they didn't ask his advice about this. Yes, Lisa. Not really. I mean, she didn't. She did go with her brothers when she left. The Medrash says that she was embarrassed, and because she realized she's at least partly responsible. I mean, no one is didn't give. Right. I mean, did she reciprocate? There's, yeah. I mean, that's a question. That's a question. There's no indication that she did. Although, again, it wasn't uncommon in the ancient world for such marriages to take place. All right. It was not uncommon. Context. Right. On the other hand, the Medrash says that she said to Shimon and Levi that she's not leaving until they married her. And she became Shimon's wife to try to purify herself from Shimon's wife, right. That was before Matan Torah. There's no Isser. And the child that she has as a result of the rape becomes, anybody knows? Anyone know? Asnat, whom Yosef later married. All right. Others say not that Shimon has a son that's mentioned later in the Torah called Shaul ben Hakna'anis, and that in fact was Dina's son with Shechem, Shaul. However you look at it, it appears that she wanted to get back into Yaakov's family, but we don't know. I mean, you could conjecture either way, but it would seem she didn't lay down in front of Shechem and say, Shimon, stop, it's my beloved Shechem. No, that she didn't say. But whether she would acquiesce or not, we can conjecture. It seemed not, though. Yes?
Who didn't see that Shechem was involved in
so it ended up there? I mean, the Rambam said it. The Rambam said it. Right. Well, you see, nothing. There was no attempt to bring Shechem to justice. Now, the Ramban is a different argument. The Ramban says, Ramban disagrees with the Rambam generally on this seventh of the Noahide laws, and he says there's no law that requires a Ben Noach to bring others to justice. Rather, what Dinan, as the seventh of the Noahide laws, states is that the nations simply have to set up a legal system, not a judicial system necessarily, but a legal system that governs their interpersonal relations, whether laws of theft or torts and commerce, etc. That's what it is. But it's a mitzvah, say. There's no penalty if it's not done. So therefore the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam and says that based on that, the brothers of Yaakov had no right to kill the city of Shechem. Now, I wrote in my article that both the Ramban and the Rambam, for different reasons, justify what happened. So someone gently took me to task and said that in the Ramban does not justify it. The Ramban argues with the Rambam and says that it's not so. In fact, Nachum Leibowitz makes such a point as well. Okay, but we'll see in a second it's not necessarily so. All the Ramban says, and it's in Pasuk Yud Gimel, if you want to look yourselves later, that you can't say simply, like the Rambam did, that because they did not enforce the law, therefore they are liable to the death penalty. He says, not so, that's not the mitzvah of dinim. And he says, besides that, if that were the case, v'chiyan shei shechem v'chal shiva amamim lo ovdim arizara u'magala rayos, weren't they idolaters? Weren't they fornicators? They did all these abominations. So therefore, the brothers of Yaakov didn't lack justification for killing Shechem. They violated other than mitzvahs b'nei Noach. So you see, there's no such din that they could take it upon themselves. Avalwat, see, the Ramban says, Aval inyan Shechem, ki b'nei Yaakov bavur shehoyu anshei Shechem rishoyim v'damam choshulam kamayim, because they saw that the people of Shechem were evil, and their blood was construed as water. Ratzuli no kem mehem becherv no kemes. They wanted to avenge their sister with the sword. They killed the king. They killed everyone else in the town. Ki avodovheim. They were servants. Visarmil mishmato. They would listen to whatever the king said. Had a meal, didn't mount anything. It was just done to flatter their master. But Yaakov said, you can't do it. Yaakov said, once they decided to do the milah, then he said, if they want to kill Shechem, that's fine. But to kill the others, that you can't do. Ulay yashuvu el Hashem? Maybe they'll be bali tshuva. Now they're Jews, they'll be bali tshuva too. So he says they killed them for nothing. It would seem, one way to read the Ramban is that he does not justify the brothers in their action. But the Arachayim disagree. That's in the Chamalevitz read it. The Arachayim HaKadosh disagrees. And he says in Pasuk Chav Vav, he quotes the Rambam, and he says the Rambam justifies it for his reason. The Ramban discounts what the Rambam says. But he says, "V'nosan tam harega shchem litzad shayu chayav and misal shayav devarizar v'chule." He says there's another reason for it, why they're able to do it. This is the Ramban, as the Arachaim understood it. It's because, in fact, they were idolaters and they were immoral. So you're not obligated to take it upon yourself to uproot this evil from the world. True, but once now they had a justification for it, because now it affected them personally. So they used the heter that they had in order to kill them. That's what Ramban says. I should hasten, the Archaim doesn't like either of it. And then he adds, he says, Udvarav Srichan Arev, the Ramban's words need a guarantor, because why does he say what he says? Ubez Hama'oros lo nosnu tam lekichas mamonam vehonom. And both of these luminaries, neither the Rambam nor the Ramban, give any reason why they were justified in taking spoils, because that's not part of the law of Haregas Bnei Noach. So that the Arachaim does not accept. But we could justify on other grounds, because in fact now it's Hefker, there are no owners. But you see, at least the Arachaim says openly that both the Rambam and the Ramban justified on different grounds. So what's Yaakov's complaint? In fact, the Ramban said that if the Rambam were correct, then Yaakov should have been in the front lines with his own sword. So you see, the Ramban has a different argument. The Ramban says that they were justified for different grounds. Justified because these people are of the Avodah Zarah and Megala Arayos, etc. But they had no chiyuv. Not everybody has to go and kill someone who violates Shemesh V'Noach. But once they had reason because it affected them personally, then they seized advantage of it. But Yaakov said what they did was not prudent. On that, the Rambam and the Ramban agree. And that's what the Torah is telling us. What they did was not prudent, not wise. And that was Yaakov's criticism of them. Yes? You mean the milah? Rav Hirsch, for example, states that it was, when Yaakov says it's odious, lahavisheni, it means achil Hashem. It's achil Hashem. But it's hard to say whether or not their motivation was because they wanted to become a Shomer Torah Mitzvos, or the motivation was that we'll take their cattle. They're wealthy people. So now they'll become family. We'll take what they have. So two ways to look at it. One is that the Machlokes is on the prudence of the act. All right. So the brothers said, and this is, I think, the point I was trying to make in my article, Yaakov looked at the big picture. Yaakov said, yeah, we want to take vengeance, but we have to do it intelligently. The brothers said, no, sometimes you do have conflicting interests whenever you act, but there is a paramount interest as well. And here the paramount interest is deterrence. In fact, what happens afterwards? Yaakov's fears were justified. The nations surrounding him came to attack him. In Pasuk Hay, in Perek Lamed Hay, by so they traveled, but vayichi taselo kim al ha'arim asher svil sehem v'lo rodfu achrei b'nei Yaakov. The fear of God was placed in these cities. They didn't chase Yaakov. Meaning, presumably, they would have had the desire to attack Yaakov. They would have had that desire. So Yaakov was correct. But God intervened to stop them. Now, I want to add one other point to that, something that Rav Elon said, which is another way of understanding the machlokas of Yaakov and his sons. And again, it doesn't touch on the... There are some people who say that it was completely immoral. The problem I have with that is then you would have to find Yaakov attacking their homicide, not just their anger. Because the homicide is what's wrong. People get angry all the time. But if you kill someone in anger, it's the heinous act that you're punished for, not the emotion that underlay the act. Rav Elon said you have two different conceptions of Jewish life here. And the Torah really is inclining to the brother's conception of Jewish life and not Yaakov. When Yaakov said that we can't do this, v'nesfu alai v'hikuni, v'nishmanati aniu v'si, Yaakov is saying, we're a small family, all right? Who are we really? We're weak, we're vulnerable, we're defenseless. We even on some level have to put up with these outrages from time to time because we're simply helpless to respond. As, in fact, Rahman al-Islam, we saw in our history too. How many times in our history were the Jewish people subject to outrages and we just could not, we don't have the power to respond to it. Just have to take our licks and move on. In fact, I was critical a few years ago a few months ago also, of the Israelis who in large measure have adopted some of the reactions of the Jewish people historically in the exile. What happened when there was a pogrom and people were killed? We buried our dead and moved on, and that was it. And here it's the same thing. They bury their dead, they rebuild the bus shelter, rebuild the restaurant, and move on, and that's it. And hope it doesn't happen again. That type of passivity is really the hallmark of the Jew in the exile. And that's a Jew. Really, Yaakov felt himself in exile here. It's a small, defenseless family. The brother said, there's a different concept here. We're not just a family anymore. Now we're a nation. And you see, the neighbors perceive us as a nation. That's ki nevala asa b'Yisrael. When they attacked Dina, when Shem kidnapped and raped Dina, he wasn't just attacking her because she was a good-looking girl. He was attacking the house of Yaakov, attacking this nation. It was an act of war against the nation of Yaakov. Ki nevala asa b'Yisrael. And the brother said the same thing. V'hayinu la'am echad. Now we're an Am, and they're a separate Am. We're not just a family, a mishpacha. We're an Am. They perceive us as a nation. If they perceive us as a nation, then a nation has the right to act in its own interests. And what the brother said, and it's always a very fascinating discussion amongst political philosophers, you see even the laws of morality are different for nations than for individuals. The greatest proof, when it comes to nations, nations are allowed to kill. Individuals are not allowed to kill. All of a sudden, a nation declares war, they can go to another nation and kill people, and that's it. And that nation has no right to take them to the bar of justice. Whereas if an individual would do it, right, then he would be brought to justice. He'd be tried and sentenced if he did such a thing. Yaakov's son, Shimon Levi, said, if we're a nation, so we have the right to act like a nation. And therefore what they did essentially was declare war on Shechem. The people of Shechem had attacked them. And in fact, it wasn't just Shechem and Hamor's father. The entire city stood by. Some say they witnessed it and did nothing. Others say they were part of the Eitzah, part of the entire consultation. How do we get Yaakov not to respond, to marry, to accept, etc.? So they're all in on it. If that's how nations act, then we're going to respond to them as a nation too. So we declared war on them. Yaakov said, we don't have the luxury of doing that. We're just a family. They said, no. Kivan nevalos b'Yisrael, we're a people. We're a nation. We're more than that. And what the brothers responded, Vayamru, Hachizono Yases Achoseinu, what are they saying? It's really a beautiful concept that we may be a nation, but we still relate to one another as if we're family. And that really is the greatness of Klal Yisrael, which Nebuch is also somewhat lost in our time. We are a nation, but not every nation is so solicitous of every member of the nation, all right? And, I'll give you an example. In the first Gulf War, Iraq took one American soldier prisoner. All right? Efahu, where is he? What is he? It's not as if it's an issue. All right? There was a time, you know, when Klal Yisrael was different than that. Different, completely different. That if a Jewish soldier, or a Jew for that matter, were taken captive, it was a national cause celeb. He would not rest. I remember, I mentioned in Shul a few weeks ago, right, and Tebi, there's this Yehoram Gaon's song, all right, Teler Tzvi, Am Hashem Yechasheh, Shet Banav Lo Yafkir Lazar, that it's a nation that doesn't abandon its children to aliens, to foreigners, all right, that every Jewish life is one that's to be sought after, and a nation would not rest. And now L'davonenu is not like that anymore. You have Jews sitting in captivity for 20 years, and it's really not a national priority. Whether it's the ones from the 82, Baumol, Katz, and Feldman, or Ron Arad, or Pollard, or Tenenbaum, or Benny Avraham, and the others from the 3 years ago, it's not really a priority. And the way even they go about seeking after their welfare is an outrage for every Jew. I mean, it's as if we tolerate the notion, without even comment, that Katz, Feldman, and Baumol are taken captive in 1982, and no one is even told of their whereabouts, but the assumption is they're killed in captivity. Jewish prisoners of war, it's assumed they're killed in captivity without any response from the Israeli government. Why is that assumption a valid one? Why don't we have the same assumption that, well, they're prisoners of war, also their lives are in danger? No, it's assumed. Like Tzahal could announce a few months ago that the three from the year 2000 who were taken on the Lebanese border, we assume they're dead. Why should they be dead? They were taken captive alive. Why should Baumol, Katz, and Feldman be dead? They were captured alive. And if they are dead, then it's because the barbarians who seized them killed them. So why isn't that price paid militarily, not diplomatically? Why isn't a statement made essentially like Shimon Levy did? Hachizona yasas achoseinu. You think you're going to treat our brothers like this? There are norms of warfare also, in which the lives of prisoners of war are sacrosanct. But no, for Jews, they could kill, just give us the bodies. You give us the bodies, we'll be thankful. That's outrageous. That means we've adopted and implemented a Golos mentality, even in Eretz Yisrael. Yes?
It almost seems like that's been saying that, and I don't necessarily assume politically that we should ignore, but it almost sounds like that's been saying we shouldn't act and then hope the fear of God comes down upon them, that we really have to act in confidence and say, what are the ramifications of us going in and doing something? And then there's Shimon Levy saying, what are the ramifications of us now going in?
That was the argument. That's why I'm not saying that Yaakov's arguments are completely discounted. I mean, Yaakov Avinu is Yaakov Avinu. He's one of the great Chachamim. But that's the machlokes. You have two compelling arguments. It's not so simple as saying, go in and, you know, nuke them, all right? Because, of course, the radiation travels westward, too. It's not always an option. And it's not as simple as saying, we can't do anything because we're so weak. Then you don't deserve to be a nation. Barbanel says here that there are times when even the Bnei Yaakov, even Bnei Yisrael, have to take up the sword to defend the honor and self-respect of the Jewish people. And there's no doubt it's a very troubling concept, because the Torah is Derechei Darchei Noam, and we represent HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, and we want to spread God's ideas. And we would love nothing more than to teach the world of the Shev Mitzvah B'nai Noach, of the basic moral norms, and of the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, period. That's what all we would want. And that is the great dilemma, especially of our time, but even in the time of David HaMelech. Whenever you're going to have a Jewish government, whenever you have Jewish sovereignty, not just to be a religion, but to be, as we are, a religio nation, not just an Am, but an Am Hashem, that's going to be a conundrum. That on the one hand, we recognize that the pacifists and moralists are very often bullied and killed, and they don't survive very long in hostile neighborhoods. And yet, conversely, to take up arms anytime, even in a noble cause, is essentially abandoning the Kol Yaakov and employing the Yidei Esav, and therefore it's self-defeating. So we're really stuck. It's a big problem. That is the but that is the dilemma. That's the paradox of being the Am Hashem, that we have to take up arms reluctantly, and when we do it, it should be swiftly and powerfully, so we can reinforce to the world, paradoxically, the norms of morality with which we were entrusted. That's a dilemma ad hayom. Now, the Torah says the very next pasuk, a point Rabbi Lohan makes as well, Vayomer Elokim el Yaakov, Kum alei beis el meshev sham, go to beis el, go dwell there, v'ase sham mizbeach, lokel nerei lecha, you'll build a mizbeach to the God who appeared before you, v'varchacha mepnei Esav achicha, when you fled from Esav your brother. So he asks, what does it mean, Esav your brother? We know about Esav your brother. That's the dilemma. So the Medrash says, if you don't leave Shechem and go to Beit El and build a Mizbeach, then harei ata ke'Esav. You're no different than Esav, really. Because Esav also uses the sword to accomplish his ends. But that's it. That's all Esav is. That's not the Bnei Yaakov. The Bnei Yaakov, yeah, we have to take up our arms sometimes. And we have to avenge our honor. We have to protect ourselves. And sometimes you have to take up the sword even to do God's work in the world. As paradoxical as that sounds. But if then you don't go to Beis El and build a Mizbeach and be a Kori B'Shem Hashem, then you're in danger of turning into Esav. And as a matter of fact, there's a greater danger too. And this is what Yaakov is referring to in the Brachos at the end when he curses their anger, their passion, their impetuosity. He says, so what does he say? What should be the fate of Shimon and Levi? I'll divide them in Yaakov. I'll scatter them amongst Israel. So the Netziv says, what's the pshat? The danger of Shimon Belevi, as we know, is one day they're fighting Shechem. The next day they don't get their will, they're fighting Yosef. They're turning on their own. That's a problem. Passion, too much passion in one person is not good. It's not good. But to have a nation which is passionless is also not good. Achal kein b'Yaakov, the Netziv said. Shimon and Levi's drive, their motivation, their willingness to sacrifice their own lives to protect their sister, to reinforce the notion that we're not just a nation now, but we're a family nation. We're the Bnei Avram, Bnei Yisrael, we call ourselves, the children of Israel. We're all children of one father. If that's lost to nations of the world, and as it is, by the way, the Christians have no such concept. I remember in the 70s and 80s, when the Christians of Lebanon, the Maronites, being persecuted by the Muslims, and killed and massacred, etc. Everybody knows about Tabor Shatila, but the Christians suffered far more than that. The Christian world couldn't care less. The Pope never said a word, the American Christian, nothing. Because they don't have the same concept of family. Religion, yes. Nation, yes. But a religio nation that they don't have. So you need that passion. You need the willingness to fight for every Jew. But if it becomes too concentrated in one person, then there's a danger of being misdirected. And if it's misdirected, then the tsaras that it causes. So they directed against Yosef, and Yaakov saw that was the danger. Where was it a positive sense? At the Egel Azov. It says, the Bnei Levi responded to Moshe's call, Mil Hashem Elai, and Moshe praises them at the end of the Torah, V'zos HaBracha. What does the Torah say? That they paid no attention. Who was family? Stepbrothers, step parents? They killed everybody who worshipped Egel Azov. It made no difference to them. What was the greatest concern? Truth. Truth. Dvar Hashem. That's Shimon and Levi. But if it's only in Shimon and Levi, it's a problem. Achal kein b'Yaakov, afitzem b'Yisrael, and the Tziv says, we need a little of that in every Jew. If you take their drive, their frenzied determination, and chop it up into 12 pieces, and give a little, sprinkle a little in each tribe, then that's what will ensure the endurance of these ideas in Klal Yisrael. If it's only Shimon and Levi, so this could be a bad thing. On the other hand, you see from here that if not for Shimon and Levi, there'd be also a loss in our collective response to this outrage. If not for Shimon and Levi, if not for the fact that they seized the initiative on their own and did something, so we'd say, like we walked away in Nebuchadnezzar from the Holocaust, you know, so survivor survived. But was there any justice? Was there any vengeance? Was there any compensation? Not really. We walk away, 6 million Jews are dead, and that's it. So you get some money here or there. I mean, now it's almost reached a farcical stage where they chase after every company, which on its fourth...
Most of the people who are supposed to get it
are dead or right, money, right. Most of the money is going to Jewish organizations, but you see, it's farcical. It's just reinforcing the notion Jews are greedy, trying to profit from the Holocaust. And corporations are sold 50 times already. And because it's the same name as it was in the 30s and 40s, so we'll get money out of it. I don't think it's a good thing. But nevertheless, you have that sense of an unassuaged grievance. That's part of life. You have both. I mean, it's a big machlokas. To me, you can look at it different ways also, but to me, that's why the Torah leaves it open. Yaakov says his side, the machlokas. The brothers say their side. Both arguments are very compelling. Both arguments, in fact, presage and foreshadow responses that Jews will make throughout history, and in fact that we make down to today. That's the greatness of the Torah.
Into Gaza and here and
what's
there.
That?
We go into Gaza here and there, and you know.
Yeah, but it's all reactive. It's all defensive. There's no attempt to change the dynamic of the situation. You know, in the parlance of those are a little more simplistic, to win the war. I mean, it's also part
Jews,
of it.
Yeah. I don't know if you heard this story, but my mother told it to me, so it's old.
I wasn't there.
No, but maybe mother's name oh, okay. came down. That two nations were fighting in Europe somewhere, I don't know.
Right.
They were fighting at swords. And when one had the swords on the other one, he said, she screamed, Shema Yisrael.
Right, right. This World War One.
World War
One.
Yeah. And the other one.
On the Russian front.
Yeah.
All right. I think it was a German Jew
down,
and a Russian
they
Jew.
They threw down their swords and they embraced.
That's correct.
Right. So that's
true. Such a, yeah, I heard such a story.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, such a story is true. That's correct.
That's why it's always Yisav Achicha. It's always Yisav Achicha. It's always Yisav Achicha.
That's
always
right.
Referred to as his brother and they it. That was it. We know you're his brother. Why is it always referring to you? Never forget there's always an Yisav in your mouth.
That's correct. That's correct. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.